Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And today, I am very honored to have Dr. Richard Butcher with us as our special guest. He has just been named the National Medical Association's Practitioner of the Year, and he's an El Cajon resident. Dr. Butcher, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now, let's start with your East County ties. I understand that you are also connected with Granite Hills High School.
Yes, we've been here quite some time. I'm the team physician at Granite Hills for the last 40 years. Had several children that graduated from there also.
Very good. And you are also the president of CareView Medical Group, and I understand that that is a medical practice in Southeast San Diego. Tell us about your clinic.
Well, my partner and I, Dr. Rodney Hood, have been together some 25 years. Prior to that, I was with another group right in the same building. But we've just, the two of us have practiced medicine there. He's an internist and I'm general practice. I see everybody from the newborn all the way to the geriatric patient.
Very good. And I understand it's a very diverse practice, serving primarily Black, Latino, and Asian patients in the neighborhood.
Yes, we have a very diverse population.
And through the years, I know, I'm friends with your wife, Vicki Butcher, full disclosure here. I understand that through the years, you've had opportunities to move to a ritzy neighborhood, and you chose to stay right there and serve people in Southeast San Diego.
Well, Miriam, one of the things that I say, the physician-patient ratio in Southeast San Diego is 1 to 2,000 to 2,500. If you go to a place like La Jolla, it's probably 1 to 250. So the number of physicians and the number of patients, we're needed there, and that's one of the reasons why we stay.
Very good. What wonderful work you're doing. You are also a former president of the National Medical Association. Can you give us a little background about the organization?
National Medical Association started in 1895 when African American physicians could not join the AMA. It was important at that time to belong to a medical society because you couldn't put a patient in the hospital.
Wow.
So when the physicians then were taking care of patients, they would have to turn their patients over to their other colleagues that needed hospitalization. So there were several of the physicians around that put this together, and since that time, the NMA was born.
Wow, that's fascinating. It's come a long way since then, we hope. I want to read a quote that Lawrence Sanders Jr., the president of the National Medical Association, read when he presented you with this prestigious award. He said, "We believe that when the history of this dynamic period of struggle is written, your name will be deeply etched in the fabric as having inspired and challenged physicians and medical professionals nationwide to address critical issues of healthcare and medicine." That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, you have quite a background. You were also the former president, I believe, as we mentioned, of the National Medical Association. And back during the Clinton presidency, Bill Clinton, you were instrumental in helping Mrs. Clinton, Hillary Clinton, draft up her healthcare reform efforts, I understand.
Yes, I was part of a team of medical professionals that came together in Washington. We met several times with her chief negotiator or chief person, Ira Magaziner. Mm-hmm. And I can remember those meetings well, flying in and spending a day or two and going over issues at that time and trying to point out issues from our standpoint of what we felt would be important to put in the bill.
I'm very curious, I'm sure our listeners are too. Mrs. Clinton's plan laid the groundwork for the Affordable Care Act, or what's known as Obamacare. What are some of the similarities, and what are some of the key differences? She is running for president. We talked to her. Do you have any idea of what else we might see?
No, I haven't talked to her, but one of the big things, I think that they both are looking at universal health care, something that I believe in and feel strongly that if we had that, that would make things better.
Yeah. And for listeners who may not know what that means, can you define the term universal health care?
It means that everyone has a basic right to have health care. So mm-hmm. you have a basic level. So everybody would have some form of health care. Now, some people would have, because they would embellish their plan, would be able to get the Cadillac version. Others mm-hmm. of us would be driving in the Volkswagen version, so to speak. Yeah. And so, but everybody would be able to access. And to me, I think that it would take a lot of burden off of emergency rooms. Yeah. A lot of people go there for colds and coughs and cuts and things like that that we could take care of in our offices. But they don't have health care. A very interesting thing happened to me walking into your studio today. Met a young man that I had taken care of the family some 15, 20 years ago.
Really?
He was trying to get seen, but he said he didn't have any health insurance. He was working, but he needed an excuse so that he could get back to work. It would cost him to be seen in the urgent care clinic $125. Mm. And so he was asking, what could he do? I told him to go over to our office, see my office manager, and that we would look into what could happen.
Oh, that's wonderful, the way you reach out and help people like that. I'm very curious, since the passage of the Affordable Care Act and the healthcare exchange covered California that we have in the state of California now, tying in with that, how is that impacting your practice and the patients that you serve, Dr. Butcher?
Well, the biggest impact is obviously we getting more patients starting to come in.
So they can actually afford to come in and get healthcare.
Right. And as I pointed out, we have an overburdened practice right now, but we're able to accommodate them and so forth. The biggest issue that I see is that a lot of these individuals have had a lot of medical issues for a period of time, yeah. and they'll come in on day one with a long laundry list saying, I need this referral, I need that, and so forth. Some of the things we're able to help them with right away, but some of the things we have to tease out and to take a closer look, making sure. And everything is not covered. Everybody mm-hmm. thinks that just because now you have health insurance, that everything is covered. So we have to try to get them to understand that.
What are some of the areas where you would like to see further improvements made? Obviously, the Affordable Care Act has been very successful in that 41 million Americans who had no insurance now have at least some form of it. But, you know, there may be some shortfalls still in the program. If you could change things, what are some of the things that you think still need improving within Obamacare?
Well, part of the thing that goes on is that, one, as I said, it is not truly a universal system at this time.
No.
So I think that that would ease up some things. But barring that, there's things such as a general formulary. Formulary is the drugs that we can order for patients and so forth, so that when we have a patient come in, we can't get all of the things that we want to get, and that would be a good thing to have. And I think, once again, we would have that. The other thing that I think that has to be addressed is that we have to make sure that we're able to increase the total payment for some of the physicians.
Yeah.
We can't get some of our physicians that would take care of some of these patients, we can't make a referral because of the level of payment. So we're kind of handicapped there at times. So these are things that are being worked on. I think that it does have a way to go, but it's definitely a start. I was pleased with the Supreme Court's decision to finally say that it is legal and that we can go from there, and we hopefully won't have to spend time, money, and effort with trying to defeat an act that's already in place.
Right. There you go. What about making it a little bit more affordable for the middle class? It seems that what I hear a lot from people is that it's done a great deal for the people who could least afford it. And obviously the people at the very top, you know, can afford to pay more for the health care. But there seem to be a lot of people in the middle who are getting squeezed, where maybe they lost their insurance and all of a sudden, I know in my own case, I'm suddenly paying almost double what I was, which is a surprise to me, and I really can't afford it. But do you think that they need to maybe look at increasing the limits a little bit on some of these things, or doing something to rein in the cost of premiums that insurance companies can charge?
Well, I think that they're working on that. Now, one of the issues that I think that has really been a blessing and a help that was not in the previous, you're talking about the differences, mm-hmm. but between Clinton's bill and the one now, is that you could carry your children on the health care, so that you could get health care for them.
Which is great. And that actually did help us. Both my kids, they stayed on all the way through college, and it also,
right.
Getting rid of the pre-existing conditions, or they have to insure you, which is actually what happened to me. I had actually been dropped, and I finally got it again, but at a much higher rate. In California, the insurance commissioner tried to get something on the ballot that would say that an insurance company would have to go before him and justify the need for a rate increase, just like car insurance companies already have to do, homeowner insurance companies. They all have to do it, everybody except healthcare. And, the healthcare industry, the insurance industry spent a lot lobbying, and they defeated that. The voters actually voted it down. But do you think that's something that is needed and that would help more people?
I think it definitely would, and I think that that is coming. But mm-hmm. I think that what we have to do is to let the dust settle. We need to get this going, and then once we have that, then we can start moving to some of the other areas.
Yeah, that would be great. Let's go back to talking a little bit about the National Medical Association. You just came back from the national conference. Tell us about some of the initiatives they're working on. You've mentioned speaking out on some things that are related to the Black Lives Matter movement and how physicians can be helpful in that area.
Well, we're looking at all areas. I mean, obviously, disparities in healthcare was a big topic, but we talk on diabetes, we talk on cancer. There was an excellent program on triple negative breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It's a cancer that's undetectable because it doesn't hit the markers, but it's more prevalent in Black women and minority women.
Yeah.
It's also a higher morbidity and mortality issue. We talked on prostate cancer, again, higher morbidity, mortality. And when I say morbidity, mortality, it means that the patients are sicker and that they die at a higher number, and so on. So those are the kinds of things that we were talking about.
Heart disease,
mm-hmm. and so on. You mentioned the violence issue, and that's something that we've taken up and put a resolution in so that hopefully we'll get some action on that issue.
What would the resolution call for?
Actually, it's calling for some studies and some issues. We want them to look at, because the underlying thing, there's these specific various instances that go on, and you can look at one or two of them and so on. But we think that you've got to look at the whole problem, and that those issues do affect the health of individuals. And a lot of times that's overlooked and not understood.
Yeah. You mentioned also that the association is working on raising awareness of racism issues in healthcare. And you told us about a very disturbing study. Can you share that with our listeners, please?
Well, this study now is well known. It was conducted by the Institute of Medicine some 13 years ago, where they took two sets of actors. One set was African American, the other set was Caucasian. They gave them the same script, so they had the same symptoms, the same medications, same backgrounds, and so on. And they walked in various offices and presented themselves with these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And when they analyzed the data, the African American patients got a lower level of care in general. So it made no difference about the insurance, the economics, or the neighborhood, or those kinds of things.
So it was just racism.
Yeah, and I think it's institutionalized and so on. So that kind of went on.
You say that was 12 years ago. What efforts have been done since then to try to improve that situation? And have there been any further studies to see if it's successful?
Well, they're still looking at that, and they're still doing issues. The NMA, National Medical Association, has been very active and supportive. The Institutes of Medicine is also continuing to look at it. So this is still being addressed.
I understand that during the Obama administration, at one point, you were actually on the short list of possible candidates to be the Surgeon General of the United States, Dr. Butcher.
I don't know how short the list was, but my name had gotten mentioned, mm-hmm. and I did get some inquiries and had to do some things, mm-hmm. but they finally selected Regina Benjamin, who I know, an mm-hmm. excellent physician.
But begs the question, if you were the Surgeon General someday and you could wave your magic Juan, what do you think the most important changes are that you would make to improve public health and the health of all Americans?
Well, the one thing, and I think it just goes back to what we were talking about earlier, it would be good for everybody to be able to have medical care, for people not to have to use emergency rooms mm-hmm. For just routine things.
What would you say to those, you know, on the other side of the political aisle maybe, who would say, how do we afford that? You know, it sounds great, but it would cost a lot of money, wouldn't it? What's the answer?
The thing, and I've looked at that, and I've had that question asked. Mm-hmm. The big thing that medicine or medical care is not a simplistic thing. So the costs have been going up. Now they're starting to level off. And if you do something like this, you're going to have to put some money in now. But the thing that I look at is down the road, 50 years from now, if we do all of this. I mean, take one example of a big topic that everybody's looking at, obesity in children.
Yeah.
And we have a high incidence of obesity in our community, in the African-American community and other mm-hmm. minority communities. One, because of the foods that they can get and in their neighborhoods. So that there are a lot of social issues and so forth.
Right.
But if we really put a lot of effort in that, 50 years from now, we're going to see less hypertension, less cholesterol problems, less heart problems. And so by doing that and then moving forward, that's where the payoff will be, and then it'll cost less.
Yeah, we're certainly seeing a lot more emphasis on preventative care with Obamacare, and even at the county level, they have their Live Well program. So are we seeing some improvements even right here at the local level on that?
Well, I think so, and we do have some initiatives that we're doing both as a practice and foundation that Dr. Hood and I put together that's working on some things.
Very good. Also at the National Medical Association conference, you mentioned there was a lot of talk about this being the 50th year of Medicare. Would you like to comment on that?
Yes, I would. I'm very proud of that. The National Medical Association signed on with Lyndon Johnson at the time, who's president, and they signed the bill making Medicare and Medicaid a national law.
Mm-hmm.
And they pointed out, we have a picture of President Johnson with two of our presidents and signing off on the bill. And one of the presidents I just spoke to, he's from St. Mm-hmm. Louis. He didn't make the meeting. He's going to be 100 in a month, Dr. Whitico. So he was pretty happy about that.
And that certainly has improved the health care quality, I think, for all of the seniors in America who can qualify. In fact, I've sometimes wondered if they need some kind of bridge program. It seems like the people that are being hurt with the premiums going up and up mostly are the older folks that aren't quite, you know, everybody I know that's like 55, 60, this seems to be the issue right now, unless you're very low income and can get those subsidies through Obamacare. But for the rest, do we need something else to maybe help the people between 55 and 65? What's the answer there?
Well, I don't have a good answer, but I think that definitely some help needs to be there. And as you know, they're going to have a large influx of this age group coming in.
Yeah, baby boomers.
Yes, there is. And that's, once again, why we need to address these issues. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't have to say, am I going to pay for this medicine or get something to eat. And a lot of times.
Yeah, or lose my mortgage or pay for my health, you know, my health care premium. It's right. just crazy the way that private insurance is going up and up.
And that affects the overall health. A lot mm-hmm. of times we'll have a patient coming in and she said, "Doctor, I couldn't get that medicine because I couldn't afford it." Or mm-hmm. "You told me to take it twice a day. I'm only taking it once a day so I can stretch it out." And I'm looking at my lab test and I said, "This is the reason why we're not getting to goal where we want to be." And yeah. so we need to keep working on that.
Well, there's certainly been some improvements in the Medicare program. And one of them that we just wrote about was, you know, the outcomes of some new requirements under Obamacare for Medicare for the hospitals to meet, where they have to start reporting those negative outcomes they have, like if, you know, patients have to be readmitted too much or they're getting too many infections or things like that. And what we've found is the ones locally, at least, we profiled one hospital where there had been some fines for some of that. Now all of a sudden, guess what? The new reporting period is coming out and they've improved that record a whole lot. So I think we're seeing improvements in patient safety, patient outcome, less money spent on readmitting people and probably less deaths even from some of these complications thanks to some of those improvements in Obamacare for the Medicare program specifically.
I think so, and it trickles down. It affects all of the care and so forth. Mm-hmm. One of the things that has gone on with our multicultural, and I mentioned the foundation that mm-hmm. My partner and I started, there was a program that looked at the people who had to go back to the hospital a lot or to the emergency room a lot. And we got a grant from CMS to do a study on that top 1% of those patients. Mm. And it was very interesting. The one thing that I can tell you is that there was one individual who they enrolled early on. She had been to the hospital 3 times during the previous year. She had had 8 or 9 emergency room visits. And when you start adding up the cost of all of that, you can understand. What they did and what this PMMI team did, they have a physician, they have a nurse, they have a social worker, they have a patient advocate, mm-hmm. and they have some other volunteers. They literally go to the patient's house, deal with them,
wow.
deal with all issues of
the old-fashioned days of doctors that made house calls.
Well, it's a little bit more than that, yeah. but transportation,
yeah.
getting their medicines, getting their visits. And during the 9 months that she was enrolled into the program, mm-hmm. had only been to the emergency room 1 time.
Wow. Well, that's wonderful. And that, again, listeners, is through the Multicultural Health Foundation.
Now what we're concerned with, because the federal grant ran out and we're starting to look for private partners to help to keep this going.
And this is a community-based group that's devoted to addressing health disparities right here in San Diego.
That's correct.
Very good. I'd like to talk about one other thing, and that is that I know that you are also very active in the nonprofit Water for Children Africa that you co-founded with your wife. I think a few of you may know her name, Vicki Butcher. She was a former congressional candidate out here, and she's served on the El Cajon Planning Commission for a lot of years, among other many accomplishments that she has. Tell us a little bit about the Water for Children Africa nonprofit and the good works that you were doing there to help people across the world.
That all started, Miriam, in my presidency, 92, with the National Medical Association. As president, you get invited to go and to do a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got an invitation to go with Dr. Sullivan over to Africa. I couldn't take off and go, and the executive director said, because my wife has always been interested in Africa and had gone several times, "Well, you can go, Vicki." And so she went, and she said, "If I go, I'm going to do what things are needed health-wise." And she got involved in this project, and now it's been going for 20 years.
So tell us exactly what they do.
Well, what they do is to send teams over to get safe, sustainable water. Now, initially, they were looking at the wells, but that was very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're looking at just water collecting systems. She currently has a machine that gets water out of air.
Yeah, and we had her on, did an interview about that a few months back. It's right. An amazing technology.
And so those are kind of things. And then they go over, they take teams, and always on the team, they have young people to go. Several of my children and grandchildren have gone. Mm-hmm. And they team up with a community base in the African village. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about going to the big cities, Johannesburg or things yeah. like that. They're going into rural, areas, and it's all over the entire continent. And she's wow. gone to about 15 different, places there and so on. And so they do this, and now they're putting in latrines. They're working on hand washing things, mm-hmm. talking about HIV.
So you bring medical supplies and medical information too. It's more than just the clean water, however important that is.
Right. But the water is the main focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you're doing wonderful work in just so many areas, Dr. Butcher, between your CareView Medical Group and the Multicultural Health Foundation and the National Medical Association, of which you've just won this Practitioner of the Year award, as well as Water for Children Africa. I'm going to let you have the final word here. What else would you like our listeners to know that I have not specifically asked you about?
Well, the thing that I'll just kind of tie up everything. What I said when I accepted the reward, I said, there's a simple mathematical equation. The whole is equal to the sum of its parts. And I said, I as the whole am accepting this award for all of the parts. I mentioned Mamie Scott, my grandmother, Alger and Margaret Butcher, my parents, mm-hmm. my children, Richard, April, Kelly, Langston, and Crystal, my grandchildren, my educational system, the Cleveland system, Allegheny College, Meharry Medical College, the National Medical Association, my partner, Dr. Hood, and my wife of 51 years, Vicky, as mm-hmm. being the parts that made the whole. And I said, I couldn't be here without all of those parts adding something to my life and my situation. And I'm thankful for that.
And you also teach a Sunday school class at Bethel AME Church.
Yes, I do. I enjoy that. And I have my grandson, Jordan, who's a senior at Granite Hills High School, playing volleyball and soccer. He's one of the students that comes in, and I make sure yeah. that he reads the lesson.
You know, Bethel AME Church, of course, had that terrible tragedy with the shooting in North Carolina. Has the National Medical Association taken steps since then to do anything to try to reduce violence targeting the African-American community, including, I should add, police violence, because we've certainly seen a lot of that attention drawn to it through the National Black Lives Matter movement?
Yes, yes, we have. And what we're doing is trying to put together various commissions, study groups, things of that nature, so that we can really understand this better. Matter of fact, toward the end of the year, the Multicultural Health Foundation, with this issue, is going to have a big conference in Southeast right next to our office. And I'll get that information to you because it's still in the formative stages. But mm-hmm. we feel that it has an impact on medicine and medical care. In other words, my partner has a talk on something called post-traumatic slavery disorder.
Interesting.
And what he says is that by having all of this and living with all of this, that when you come in, does your blood pressure reflect this? I mean, you might not say mm-hmm. it's due to that, but when we see, besides giving you all the medicines, the blood pressure staying up is that part. And there are some things that he's working on and some discussions. And so we feel that we need to look at that. We need to tease this out, and we need to stay on top of it.
Yeah, very, very important. We've been speaking with Dr. Richard Butcher, a San Diego physician and El Cajon resident who is the recipient of the Practitioner of the Year Award from the National Medical Association. Dr. Butcher, congratulations again on that tremendous honor, and thank you for joining us on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much.